welcome to the Well Podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us as we discover, encounter, and display the love of Jesus. Our services are at 9 and 11 a.m. in Artesia, California. You can find out more about us by going online and visiting us at gotothewell.church and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. You are loved. Everybody doing okay this morning? I know it's a little gloomy out there, but we're doing all right. Excited for Christmas? Well, I'm excited to be with you all this morning. Me and Abby just got off of finals week. I'm a professor over at a college, and we just had finals week. So she had finals that she was taking. I had finals I was administering. And so both of us are very much looking forward to this break as if it was a massive, just long Christmas day. So hopefully you guys find some time to be able to take a break and get some rest. And it's just funny, as we get older, it's almost as if those times and those breaks where we get a chance to breathe, it's almost as precious and as valuable as the gifts in and of themselves. Am I the only one, or everybody else? Okay, you guys feel me out there? Okay. All right, you three people, thanks for responding. Well, again, I get the privilege of being able to hang out with you guys and being able to share something this morning. And as I usually do, we start out with the story. When I was about 5 years old, we had some things happen where I was going to school and I didn't feel very well, and my stomach wasn't feeling well as a kid, but I ran a fever, and Joe's probably diagnosing me what was going on. I ran a fever, my stomach starts hurting, but I was, elementary school was such a nerd that I really loved to go to school, so, and that still holds true today, and so hence why I'm out of school still. So I went, and my mom had this thing in her head where she told the nurse, one of the teachers there, it's like, hey, once he stops eating, go ahead and call me and let me know. So we go, and I go to school, and then I stop eating. They call my mom and then end up taking me to the hospital, and turned out I had appendicitis. And if they would have taken me about 10 minutes later, the whole thing just would have ruptured. And so that was, again, when I was about 5 years old. So go to have an appendicitis, and then a couple days later, I end up getting bit by a spider, and it turns into a staph infection. And so I'm 5 years old, my appendix almost blows up, and then my little arm is the size of a football because of how swollen it is. And all this is happening around Christmas. And so I'm in the hospital specifically for the staph infection. That Christmas, day before Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Eve comes by, I'm in the hospital. Overnight Christmas, you have the kind of the village Santa who goes around visiting kids, and I'm one of those kids that are in there, and I have the question. I ask my mom, Mom, how does Santa know I'm in here? That these kind of things that happen, and just kids ask random questions, and I was one of them. And so I'm sitting there in the hospital, and then my mom ends up having to go home because she's going to go home and take a shower and stuff like that. So I'm kind of there on Christmas Eve, going into Christmas, just there in the hospital. And as a kid, as you can imagine, you have all these expectations with the way that Christmas is going to turn out. Because as I'm sitting there eating Jell-O and drinking apple juice and water, I'm imagining all these things that were happening. It was disappointing. And there were a few Christmases like that growing up, and some of you heard my story growing up, that were quite disappointing. And oftentimes we have these expectations that when these big days come around, like a birthday, that when you have this birthday that's coming up, we're going to go do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And it turns out either really great, or maybe you kind of roll with the punches. Or you're about to go on that hot date that you've been waiting for and planning for, planning out all the outfits. You go to the mall, planning on taking it back after in case it doesn't work out. Or you might keep it if it does work out because it's like, that's what you want to look good in. Or you're getting ready for the big day on your wedding day, or your son or daughter, grandkids all getting married, one of your friends getting married, so you got to get dolled up. All these expectations that go into this. Or maybe you're getting ready for retirement. You're thinking about retirement down the line. You're saving up, thinking all down the line, oh man, we're going to have so much time to get to do all these different things. Of course, the budget lets you do it. And then all this time that you're going to be able to spend, all these places that you're going to go. Except when it comes to sometimes when our expectations aren't met, and that happens to us quite often. That we have a couple of different options that we get to choose. When we do have our expectations disappointed, not met, that we can either choose, okay, is what it is, we're going to roll with the punches, or get deflated and kind of figure, okay, maybe this is just the way things go. That kind of deflated sense of, well, I guess nothing ever really is going to get better. Nothing ever going to work out. You put on that Eeyore hat and just kind of lie underneath the sticks. So if you go ahead and turn your Bibles over to Matthew 2, Matthew 2. I'm going to be reading from Isaiah chapter 9. And I'm going to be focusing on specifically verse 6 and verse 7, if you want to go ahead and pull that up, as you guys are turning there to Matthew 2. So you guys camp out in Matthew 2. I'm going to make a pit stop over here in Isaiah. It reads here in Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. For to us a child is born, and to us a son is given. And the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end. And on the throne of David and over his kingdom, and to establish it and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. So in this part of Isaiah, we're going to stay camped out for a little bit, and then we're going to move over to Matthew. But what Isaiah is trying to get at, there's going to be this kid that rises up just like his grandpa David. And on these tiny little soft shoulders are going to be the weight of all authority and power for this kid to rule, or this one like David to rule. That they're going to have a rule, a global rule that's going to last forever. But instead of terror, there's going to be peace. And it's funny with how it kind of starts lining up with Advent. That it starts to grow this expectation that this one who comes like David, this child is going to be born. This king that's going to be entrusted to us, to care for us, to shepherd us, to pastor us. He's going to be one who rules and rules in peace. And so as you guys are turned over to Matthew 2, I'm going to go ahead and turn there with you to join you all now. Now this is the expectation. This one like David, going to have all this authority and power on his shoulders. Coming to wipe out our enemies. Establish us as God's people on the earth. To make us secure and to make us safe. And this is our expectation. So over in Matthew 2, verse 1. Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, somebody say Herod. Herod. Oh, come on, it's what, 9:30? Come on, somebody say Herod.
Herod.
Hey, thank you. In the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, where is he of who has been born the king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. When Herod heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. And they told him, in Bethlehem of Judea. For so it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Starts sounding a lot. They got some expectations too. Somebody say Herod again. Herod. Then Herod summoned the wise men and secretly ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem saying, go, search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him. And after listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose and went before them, until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures and offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. A lot of us are familiar with this story. Because you usually think it's about some three wise dudes that come around offering Jesus some weird presents. This funky baby shower they decide to throw for Jesus. But what precedes some of that, that we're introduced to a character named Herod. And it's awkward that we have in this birth narrative that we're not introduced to Joseph and Mary and all his parents and the people that are there. We're introduced to this king named Herod. And for those of us that are familiar with Herod, we know that he's a pretty bad dude. He doesn't have necessarily the greatest legacy. And while that's true, it's not necessarily the whole picture about Herod. You see, Herod did some things. He was quite the architect. He built massive buildings. He built a temple that was roughly anywhere between 6 to 8 stories high. For Yahweh, this was the place where they worshipped. It was quite massive.
And he also built different structures in the land. But these were often vanity projects. And so you see, Herod often would enlist enforced slave labor in order to accomplish these kinds of tasks. And so we have a picture here for you of what Herod's his house tend to look like. If you guys can go ahead and pull that up. And so you can kind of see there, up to the top kind of left corner there, you see that building there. It kind of looks fairly small, maybe look like a Lego playset, a couple feet high, maybe something similar to ours. But yeah, that entrance is about 3 to 4 stories high. And the structure only gets bigger from there. He has a pool outside. It's about 70 feet wide. And so this is no small place. And this is a king that we're introduced to as the text begins to move forward. Again, the way Herod tends to rule is a lot by these vanity projects and enlisting and forced labor. This king isn't necessarily the depiction of what we're coming to find in Isaiah 9. But this is the king that we're introduced to. And this is the king, mind you, a little awkward, that they're going and asking, hey, where's the king of the Jews to the king? That these magi that are looking for the king, they come to Jerusalem, which makes sense because that's where the temple is at. That's where the king's palace is at. But yet these magi come saying, we've seen a star and we know that this new king has been born. So where's he at? Imagine you're a boss somewhere and somebody comes to you. They know you're the boss. Hey, where's the boss? They know you're the boss, except for the fact that they know that somebody else is lined up to be the boss instead of you. And so Herod, out of his paranoia and out of his fear, starts to ask a few questions. And the question Herod asks is the same question that the Magi will ask. Who's this king and where is he supposed to be born? But their ambitions, their desires couldn't be more different. Because while the Magi want to go worship, pay respects as you would to a king, Herod wants to get rid of him. He wants to kill him. He wants to thwart any kind of person that would rise up against him. And so Herod tells him to go, and the Magi go, and upon finding this house in Bethlehem, which is about 9 miles south of Jerusalem, so they weren't too bad. They were 9 miles off. They're just following the stars, so there's no GPS. They did all right. They travel about 9 miles south. They get to Bethlehem, which Bethlehem's only known for two things, sheep and David. Sheep, because that's where they got their sheep for Passover, and David, because that's where David was born. David, who's Israel's greatest king, is the one who makes Bethlehem known. So it makes sense, partially, why this prophecy comes about, that in Bethlehem, there's going to come this ruler just like David. But Herod wasn't it. Herod wasn't it. So when the Magi get to Bethlehem, they come upon this house, and they behold this toddler. Because mind you, when the Magi do find this kid, Jesus is anywhere between 1 to 2 years old. Jesus is just learning how to walk and how to talk. There's a lot of hills around there, so you kind of stumble around. Then as they find this toddler, they rejoice. And then they do something weird. When I tend to see a toddler, I kind of squeal a little bit when I saw a Lincoln and just see babies get overcome with joy. I don't know, you guys ever do that? You just figure that you make noise and stuff. So I always make weird faces and make weird noises as if the baby can understand or the child can understand what I'm doing. And I like to think they do. I don't know if they do. No baby has told me otherwise. So I'm going to keep on doing it. And so this little me, 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 play hide and seek, thinking I'm disappearing. Never have I once decided to bow my knee before this toddler saying, oh, beautiful baby. I might do it to my daughter. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But what the Magi do is that they begin to do something really, really, really weird, because they're not just there to pay respects. They're bowing themselves. Mind you, this is a Middle Eastern context. So they're getting themselves as low to the ground as they can. Mind you, this dude's maybe 2 feet high, maybe. It's a different kind of response, but because this is a different kind of king. This king isn't from the palace. He's not from the place of power. He's from this podunk village where the only thing they're known for is this one king from a long time ago. Mind, he was the greatest, but still. And a bunch of sheep. But this is where God decides to show up. This is where God decides to show up, not in the places of power where it's to be expected. He shows up in this little podunk village called Bethlehem. And of course, there's prophecies about it, but Bethlehem ain't no Hollywood. Might be closer to a place like Artesia or Lakewood or Cerritos. A lot more humble. Or maybe it's a place out there in the desert, like Lancaster, dare I say, Bakersfield. There you go, I went too far. Okay, there you go, found the line. Found the line. But there's not much that's expected from there. But this is where Jesus' life begins. And all the way from Jesus' life and his very beginnings is what's going to mark his life again and again and again. Is that this king isn't like anybody else, that this king is different. Jesus is a different kind of king. And brothers and sisters, that's my first point for you here this morning. That this Jesus is a different kind of king. He's not born in palaces, 3, 4, 5, 6 stories high. He's born in lowly places that was only a little bit better than what would be a barn. And I've scoured the globe for all of you because I enjoy doing research. And I have looked far and wide for a picture, a depiction of what did it look like when Jesus was born. And I got newsflash for you, all y'all that came this morning. I found it. Picture right there. It was like 3 or 4 BC if you guys want to pull it up. Looks just like it. Look it. That you see who Jesus is surrounded by. Animals. Foreigners. These guys are outsiders. There you go, Roger. Thank you. He's loving it. I'll send this to you after message. Straw. He's not standing on porcelain or marble floors. There's a little baby right there reaching out. You have a couple of poor nobodies, Mary and Joseph. You have a few animals, some unclean shepherds, and you have poop on the ground because there's animals everywhere, animal waste. And this is closer to the reality that Jesus is born into. So it should make us wonder, what kind of king is this? The one who's born not in a palace, but in a place where animals go to use the bathroom. This is a different kind of king, and all throughout Jesus' life, again and again and again, we're going to find a Jesus who does different things, like spend time with tax collectors, sinners, and prostitutes, like reach out to religious elite and outcasts. This is a different kind of king who's presenting himself as not somebody who just always plays by the rules and coerces people into doing whatever he wants. That Jesus doesn't pick up the scepter or the sword. What he does is he picks up the towel and he serves. And then later on, he's going to go pick up the cross to die. That Jesus' way of ruling ain't like anything we ever seen before. That Jesus doesn't call others to sacrifice on his behalf, but rather sacrifices himself in order to bring about reconciliation between us and God, and to show us this new way. And it's because Jesus is a different kind of king that we've got a different kind of call. It's because Jesus is a different kind of king that you and I, brothers and sisters, have a different kind of call. That we can no longer force and manipulate people to try to do what we want them to do, but rather we lovingly serve people. When is the last time we all asked? You know, I had to take some time for this to realize, in what ways can I treat people better? Co-workers, families, friends. I know from the last time I spoke last month, we talked about turning hostility into hospitality. But just to bring up that same theme again, what ways we treat people? Do we love people? Do we serve people? Look out for the best in people? Or do we just try to manipulate and control? For those of you in relationships and spouses and those of you with kids, and I know it's easy to disqualify me because I don't have kids, but one of the things I've seen proven true, that to at least ask the question, can I ask the question? Is there a different way to parent, to be in relationship with one another, where we don't have to yell, where we don't have to manipulate, we don't have to threaten or abuse, in order to be able to live with one another, and especially with kids? That is there a way to train them up that doesn't involve manipulation or force like that? Is there a different way to be in the world? Is there a different way to be in relationships with one another? Or instead of reaching out for power, reach out for one another in love? Because mind you, that's what Jesus does to us and for us. That Jesus doesn't coerce or manipulate. What he does, he loves us into submission. That it's God's kindness that leads us to repentance. It's not coercion, manipulation, guilt tripping, shaming. It's kindness. And God's kindness demonstrated in Jesus. Now, for those of you here this morning, if you've never felt that, you've never known that, I just want to let you know that regardless of how you've grown up, that God doesn't see you that way. God doesn't coerce you or manipulate you or guilt you or shame you. Those are tactics we tend to do. That's tactics the enemy tries to do. We can do to ourselves. But that God loves you, he cares about you, wants to bring you in. That he uses his spirit to draw you into this radical new kind of way of life, but he does it through love. And that in this passage, the encouragement to don't be like Herod. Be like Jesus. Herod coerces, uses power, builds up these vanity projects. To be like Jesus who serves, who's born in humble places and continues on that legacy of humility. And this brings me to my next point, that God tends to show up most often when and where we least expect him. Again, the king wasn't supposed to be in Bethlehem. The king was supposed to be in Jerusalem. That place with all that power, all those buildings, where the temple's at. But God tends to show up in those kinds of places when and where we least expect him. That God shows up with these outcasts. God shows up with the poor. God shows up with these people that he shouldn't be showing up with. And God shows up with each and every one of you. In places and in circumstances where we don't expect him to. So brothers and sisters, here this morning. Bless you. Here this morning, to be able to take a look at your life and to see the ordinariness of it or the chaotic nature of it as a gift, because it is. But to also be able to see it as a place where God so much desires to show up. And that the world is made wondrous. It's made a wonder. It's beautiful. Not despite the fact that your life is so ordinary. Our lives are so ordinary. But because it's so ordinary, because it's chaotic, that God almost has to show up. We need him to show up. And that Jesus has a habit of taking ordinary things and being able to infuse the divine with it and be able to tell us a story. It's what happens with bread and juice. That Jesus has a habit of taking these ordinary things that don't have a lot to him, unless it's Welch's and Hawaiian bread, and then that just could speak for itself. But yeah, Jesus has this habit of taking ordinary things and just doing something miraculous with it. Jesus has a habit of doing those kinds of things. He does it with water. How he turns these waters from just simple H2O into turning both into the tomb that we're buried with Jesus, but then also the womb that we rise out of and enter into new life. And brothers and sisters, God uses these very ordinary things, but it's up to us to have our eyes open and our expectations open to be able to see, okay, God, where are you working in this? And give me eyes to see, ears to hear what it is that you're doing. Because again, God has a tendency to show up in these unexpected places. He showed up in Bethlehem. He shows up on a cross. He shows up rising out of the grave. And brothers and sisters, who knows where else he's going to show up in our lives? In the places where we're most dependent, where we're most fearful, where we're most anxious, where we're most angry, where we're most afraid, when we have no idea what's going on, and to be able to reach out and say, God, wouldn't you help me with this? Would you give me peace? Would you help me to know that you're in the middle of this and to be able to allow God just to show up again? Because again, what this story does tell us and model for us is the fact that God has this tendency of just showing up in places where he's least expected. These past few months have been a little difficult wrestling with some things, specifically with bills and different things that have come up for me and Abby. Bills that are always there and they're always piling up and things like that. School loans, God bless them sometimes, that are there. So wrestling with those, wrestling with different things, having being here and then being over at the school and just managing so much and feeling like never have enough time or energy. And then me, myself, wrestling with this idea that I'm not enough to be able to fulfill all these expectations. Because though we celebrated our 1 year anniversary, I realized like, man, how am I have this tendency to kind of do this thing where I'm kind of restocking and refiguring out, okay, how am I doing this year? And so as I'm looking back, I realize that like, man, I messed up this time, this. So I have a tendency to look at those kinds of things. And so as I'm trying to figure out, okay, in what ways these deficiencies and trying to have control, because that's what I want. I really want control. I don't want things to be chaotic and to be out of my control. I want to be able to know that I'm enough for these situations. I want to be able to know that everything's going to be okay, that I'm going to be okay, that we're going to have enough money, we're going to have enough this, we're going to have enough that, we're going to have enough time, the work's going to be great enough. All these different things, because I don't want to have faith, I don't want to have to trust, and that's just being honest. And a lot of us can be in the same kinds of places. And so as I'm wrestling with these things, again, and I can't tell you enough how many times, and Abby can testify to this if you want to ask her later, of how many times God showed up again, again, and again, and again to multiply what little things I could do here and there to somehow give us more time when we didn't have enough time, and to be able to work out in ways that lets me know beyond not just that I'm okay, but that there's grace in the chaos. And brothers and sisters, I want to tell you here this morning, wherever you're at right now, there's grace for you right in the midst of your chaos. There's grace for you in the chaos. There's grace for your failures. There's grace for when you fall short in your falling of Jesus. There's grace for you when you've missed Jesus because you're too busy focused on something else. There's grace for you to teach you in this new life of how to live. There's grace for you in the midst of this chaos that isn't just this Christmas season, but is so much of our lives. There's grace for you because God's with you. There's grace for you because Jesus shows up in the middle of that chaos, in the middle of those places where we wouldn't really think he should be showing up. There's grace for you. And so as I invite the worship team to come on up, that one of the responses that these magi have when they find Jesus, and I brought up earlier, when they see the toddler, when their expectations are partially fulfilled, maybe they're thinking they're going to see this king in a palace, but rather they find him in this carved out rock, that all these animals are there, and when they find him in this space in Bethlehem, what they do is that they present themselves and they pay homage or they worship Jesus. And we see in the scriptures over and over again that when people come into contact with this risen Jesus, and it's here in the text, that after being warned in a dream that the Magi go a different direction, I just want to bring up that when we come into contact with Jesus, we can't leave the same. We can't go back the same way. These magi go back rejoicing, going a different way. And for us here this morning, I want to encourage you. First, that there's grace for you. The God's a God of grace in the midst of the chaos. And if you're needing that grace, open up your heart to be able to receive that grace, to see a picture of a Jesus who extends his grace towards you wherever you're at right now, to make you whole, to make you new,
to give you new life, to encourage you, to build you up. And the other thing is that what's our response going to be when we meet Jesus in those places where it's unexpected? In the middle of that doubt, in the middle of that fear, in the middle of that anger, in the middle of the uncertainty, in the middle of the joy, in the middle of the fun, in the middle of the boredom. What's our response going to be? And I want to encourage y'all here this morning that when we do come into that collision with Jesus, that one of our options that we have is to worship. It's to be able to say thank you, Jesus, to recognize who God is. It's to thank him for providing, thank him for being with you, and to continue to reach out again and again, no matter how weak or how frail, how strong, how powerful we feel, to reach out and worship and to be able to thank him for his goodness and his grace towards us. So if I can invite you all to stand up. We're going to go ahead and begin to worship here this morning.
Thank you for listening to the Well Podcast. If you'd like more information or would like to get connected, visit us at gotothewell.church. Visit us again next week as we continue to discover, encounter, and display the love of Jesus. You are loved.